Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. So, reading from the Srimad Bhagavatam, this is the 7th canto, chapter 6, verse number 7. Mugdashya Balye Kashore Kridato Yati Vimsatihi Jaraya Krasta Dehasya Yati Akalpasya Vimsati. Thank you. Mugdasya Bale Kaishore Kridato Yati Vimsatihi Jarya Krasta Dehasya Yati Akalpasya Vimsatihi Mugdasya Balye Kashore Kridato Yati Vimsatihi Jarya Krasta Dehasya Yati Akalpasya Vimsatihi. Vaishnavis. Mukdasya, of a person bewildered or not in perfect knowledge. Balye, in childhood. Kashore, in boyhood. Kridataha. Plain. Yati. Passes. Vimsatihi. 20 years. Jarya. By invalidity. Grasta dehasya. Of a person overcome. Yati. Passes. Akalpasya. Without determination. Being unable to execute even material activities. Vimsatihi. Another 20 years. Translation and purport by Srila Prabhupada. In the tender age of childhood, when everyone is bewildered, one passes 10 years. Similarly, in boyhood, engaged in sporting and playing, one passes another 10 years. In this way, 20 years are wasted. Similarly, in old age, when one is an invalid, unable to perform even material activities, one passes another 20 years wastefully. Please repeat. In the tender age of childhood, when everyone is bewildered, one passes 10 years. Similarly, in boyhood, engaged in sporting and playing, one passes another 10 years. In this way, 20 years are wasted. Similarly, in old age, when one is an invalid, unable to perform even material activities, one passes another 20 years wastefully. Purport. Without Krishna consciousness, one wastes 20 years in childhood and boyhood, and another 20 years in old age, when one cannot perform any material activities and is full of anxiety about what is to be done by his sons and grandsons and how one's estate should be protected. Half of these years are spent in sleep. Furthermore, one wastes another 30 years sleeping at night during the rest of his life. Thus, 70 out of 100 years are wasted by a person who does not know the aim of life and how to utilize this human form. Om Jnana Tamarandasya Gyananjana Salakaya Chaksus Unmilitam Yena Tasmai Sri Gurave Namah Sri Chaitanya Manobhistam Slapitam Yena Bhutale Swayamupagadamayam Dadanti Svapadantikam Jai Shri Krishna Chaitanya, Prabhu Nityananda, Shri Advaita Gadadhara, Shri Vasari Gaur Bhaktivinoda. Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare. Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare. Vanchakopa, Tubhyascha, Kripa Sindhu Bhavacha, Patitanam Pavanebhyo, Vaishnavebhyo, Namo Namaha. So the verse again. Mukdasya Bale Kashore, Kridato Yativam Satihi. Jarya grasta dehasya, yati akalpasya, vimsatihi. In the tender age of childhood, when everyone is bewildered, one passes 10 years. Similarly, in boyhood, engaged in sporting and playing, one passes another 10 years. In this way, 20 years are wasted. Similarly, in old age, when one is an invalid, unable to perform even material activities, one passes another 20 years wastefully. So, we just finished in the previous chapter the education of Sunda Anamarka. Sunda Anamarka education. So now we have the education given by Prahlad Maharaj, who is a pure devotee. And he's a person with critical judgment. And he's telling it like it is. And this is what's needed. There's a nice quote from Chanaka Pandit. He says, "For want of discernment, the most precious jewels lie in the dust at the feet of men, while bits of glass are worn on their heads. But we should not imagine that the gems have sunk in value and the bits of glass have risen in importance. When a person of critical judgment shall appear, each will be given its right position. So this is the person of critical judgment is Sri Prahlad Maharaj, and is given us in this chapter how to see things properly. He's advising these sons of the demons. And even in the Bhagavad Gita, it says we shouldn't preach to the demons. Don't talk this truth to the demons, because they can't understand. They haven't gone under austerities. You know, they're not very serious. So don't speak these lessons to the demons, Krishna says in Bhagavad Gita. But Prahlad Maharaj, he's advising them. And this is the difference between the devotees and Krishna. The devotees are even more merciful than Krishna. So even though they think, oh, he's not going to understand nothing, but they try out of their compassion to enlighten the conditioned souls, whether they're demons or rakshasas, yakshas, yavanas, malechas, anyone, they're compassionate. Because the devotee, he knows the rightful position of things. He's like a swan. The swan can discern the rich milk from the water. So this is the person of critical judgment. He can discriminate between what is material and what is spiritual. So from time immemorial, living entities have been attached to these material sense objects. The mind is attached to the sense objects, and the sense objects are in the mind. And this is a very perplexing situation that we're in. It's a very bewildering. The great sages once approached Lord Brahma, his four sons, the Kumaras, and they're asking about this. How is this possible? You know, we're here in this mature world. The mind and the senses seem to be so together. How can you separate the mind from all these sense objects? So Lord Brahma thought about that, and he was thinking, he couldn't figure it out. He was like, because he was engaged in the three modes of material nature, you know, absorbed in these objects and the mind like that, and he couldn't figure it out. So he began to meditate, thinking of this question. It was bewildering for him. So while he was meditating, Lord Hamsa appeared. Krishna in the form of a swan appeared. And he came to show how to discriminate this matter from spirit. So he began to give this really nice transcendental instructions about how, you know, the mind is totally absorbed. I mean, the mind and the senses, they interact. They're together. You can't separate them. There's an analogy of pure gold, which represents the living entity. But sometimes pure gold, they make it into its alloyed. So it has sometimes impure alloys in it. So how to separate those alloys from the pure gold is like trying to separate the mind from the sense objects. You can't just wash the gold with soap and water and expect it to be all the impurities to come out of the gold. It's impossible. So Hamsa is explaining that these things, the mind and the senses, they're actually empowered. That's what they do. They're here in the mature world and they engage the mind in that way. So how to separate? You know, it's going on since time immemorial. And people, just what's happening? People go through their life and they waste it without even understanding the secret, how to separate that. We think, oh, I'm growing, you know, I'm so old, I'm getting better, I'm healthy, I'm young, I'm growing. But Prabhupada said, what is this growing? There's no growing in the material world. What are we doing? We're dying. Even if you're one day old, you're one day dead. If you're 50 years old, then you're 50 years dead. So Prabhupada said, all we do here is die. This is Mrityu Loka. It's the planet of death. So we began to wake up and think, all this dying, you know, everyone just growing up to die. They're just dying at every moment. What's the point? So if we're here, then that means, you know, I'm attracted to these sense objects, so maybe these will make me happy. And this is described as pramatasya. One is mad pramatasya. So this is the bewilderment of the living entities. They're actually crazy, confused, bereft of actual intelligence. They're maddened. And this is what's happening. People are working like madmen in the material world. Just for one example, a thief. He thinks that by stealing, I'll be happy. But he's putting himself at risk. He's going to someone's home. There could be a mean killer dog, a pit bull. You know, could just chop his hand off or his leg or something. You know, or the guy there may say, forget the dog. Watch out for my Smith & Wesson. You know, he's got a gun. He could shoot you in this way. So still, even though there's so much danger and pain, still he'll go out and do that. So therefore, it's described that a madman, he can't be cured of his madness by punishment. If someone's mad, just like so many people are mad, they go to the prisons, they come out of the prisons, and they're still just as mad. How can they become cured? So it's not by punishment. And just see, people are working for wealth. What's the result of working for wealth? It's described in the 11th canto that this greed for wealth contaminates men. And it describes 15 different qualities that one starts to develop when one has this greed for wealth in the material world. They're theft, violence, speaking lies, duplicity, lust, anger, perplexity, pride, quarreling, enmity, faithlessness, envy and the dangers caused by women, gambling, and intoxication. These are the 15 undesirable qualities that one develops or that one is contaminated by just by working like a madman for wealth in the material world, just by becoming greedy for something to enjoy sense gratifications. In fact, it's so contaminating that it's described even a man's brother, his wife, his parents, friends, even though they are so-called united in love and friendship, that affectionate relationship will be immediately broken and they'll become enemies just over a single coin. And for even a small amount of money, what to speak of, you know, becoming enemies, that even for a small amount of money, they'll become agitated and angry at each other. They'll act as rivals. And they'll give up all their sentiments of goodwill. And they'll reject one another just at a moment's notice. In fact, they'll even commit murder. Just for wealth. And the human life is so valuable. They don't know the value. It's wasted in life, but they don't know the value of the human life. It's described as the most valuable thing that we have, the most valuable asset. It's like a boat that carries us over this ocean of miseries and goes over into the spiritual world. This human life is even prayed for by the demigods. Because in human life, you can be situated as a first-class brahmana. And then you could become completely fortunate and solve all the problems of life. There's a nice quote in the 11th canto. It says, "What mortal man, having achieved this human life, which is the very gateway to both heaven and liberation, would willingly become attached to the abode of worthlessness, material prosperity?" And this is in the 11th canto, Avanti Brahmana came to his senses, and he squandered wealth. He was actually a miser. He tried to hoard it and didn't distribute it properly. And then he's saying to himself, he finally woke up, and he said, "Discriminating persons who are able to utilize their money, youth, and strength to achieve perfection, but have feverishly squandered these in the useless endeavor for further wealth. Now I'm an old man. What can I achieve?" So see, now he's realizing he's just lost for just this wealth. And he's saying that just suffered in vain efforts to get this wealth, and the whole world is most bewildered by someone's illusory potency. That's that illusory potencies. So before one dies, one should actually understand what the value of life is. It's not meant just to enjoy like a prince. Actually, death is not very much welcome for people who enjoy, because they just want to enjoy. They're trying to do something to maintain their life. They don't want to die because they think this is all there is. So once there was this great sadhu who met these different personalities, and he met this prince. He was the son of the king, and he blessed him saying, "My dear prince, may you live forever." So the point is that those who are sensual, those who are engaged in sense gratification, they don't wish to die. They want to enjoy their senses, and they want to live forever. So the sage blessed him, because if you die, then from all this sense enjoyment, you'll go to hell. So therefore, live forever, don't die. But anyway, that's what Hiranyakashipu thought, that he could live forever and not die and enjoy his senses. But here in the mature world, everybody's taken. Just within a second, Lord Nrisimhadev ended Hiranyakashipu's life. So, what is this, human life or is it animal life? It says, "Men have eating, sleeping, fearing, and mating in common with the lower animals. That in which men excel the beasts is discretionary knowledge. Hence, indiscreet men who are without knowledge should be regarded as beasts." So it described how Prahlad Maharaj had this discrimination. So as human beings, we should discriminate between what is spiritual and what is material. Again, we're coming to this question that was perplexed by Lord Brahma. How do you separate the mind from these material sense objects? It's very difficult. Even Uddhava said, "My dear Krishna, generally human beings know that material life brings great future unhappiness, and still they try to enjoy material life. My dear Lord, how can one in knowledge act just like a dog, an ass, or a goat?" So this is how he's just seeing this also. How is it that people, you know, the human life is meant to end the miseries, but yet they work for things that actually make them unhappy? Just like the animal, you know, again, he's trying to steal food or do this. Sometimes he'll be beaten, or the animal's trying to get sex from the opposite, you know, mate, and he gets kicked in the face, or he gets bitten, you know, or he gets devoured even. This is possible. So this is not what human life is meant for. Actually, what's the use of a long life? Even Chanakapana says again, "A man may live for but a moment, but that moment should be spent in doing auspicious deeds. It is useless living for a kalpa, 4,320,000 years times 1,000 years, and bringing only distress upon the two worlds, this world and the next. And we know that Maharaj Parikshit, he only had 7 days to live, and he was encouraged by Sukadeva Goswami, and he said, it's better to live for a moment with full consciousness of the supreme interest to be fulfilled. The supreme interest of life is eternal, with full knowledge and bliss. Those who are bewildered by the external feature of the material world are engaged in the animal propensities of eat, drink, and be merry type of life. They're simply wasting their life as these unseen passing time destroys their valuable years. So what's our first concern? Again, we're getting back to the senses and the sense objects. And Chanakapana says again, you know, he's a very scholarly person, probably used to quote him from all the scriptures, he would imbibe all these different sayings like a gem of knowledge. If you wish to gain control of the world by the performance of a single deed, then keep the following 15, which are prone to wander here and there from getting the upper hand of you. And what are those 15? One thing, you just control 15 things if you want to gain control of the world. That's the five sense objects, sight, sound, smell, taste, and touch, the five sense organs, ears, eyes, nose, tongue, and skin, and the organs of activity, hands, legs, mouth, genitals, and anus. Again, how do you control these things? He's mentioning the same things, the senses and the sense objects. How do you gain control of that? How do you separate the mind from these things? It's very difficult. Even if one who's not controlled his senses and he thinks of going to the forest as a yogi, what's happening? His senses go with him. Like in Bengal, they have a saying that if you go to Bengal, your fortune will go with you. So wherever you go, you're taking your mind and your senses. So our first concern should figure out how to control these senses. This is our process. So we have the power of a pure devotee, Prahlad Maharaj. He's come to give us this devotional service. And once one's heart is actually melted by the instructions of the devotee, it's melted by the process of devotional service, and he can actually separate these impurities from his pure mind, from the pure intelligence. Because you see, the intelligence in the mature world is polluted because the soul is an observer. And there's three states of consciousness that pollute the intelligence. This is the waking consciousness, there's the dreaming, and then there's a deep sleep, dreamless sleep, mode of ignorance. These are the three states of consciousness that pollute the intelligence. So, but the soul has nothing to do with these states. It's actually on a fifth dimension. It's spiritual. It's above all these things. So if one can realize that actually I'm above all these things, I'm above the senses, I'm above the mind, the pure intelligence then realizes and discriminates, and he acts as a witness seeing these things happening, and he discriminates that this is actually something material, and he drags his mind back. He drags his mind away from material sense objects. And what does he do? By the instructions of a pure devotee, like Prahlad Maharaj, he engages them in devotional service. And if one engages in devotional service, then automatically, without separate endeavor, the senses are controlled. He's completely aloof from everything. The analogy is using just like a drunk person. He's completely oblivious to whether he has his jacket on or his shirt on. He's completely unaware. So the pure devotee is going about eating, sleeping, doing these different things, but his consciousness is completely aloof. He's absorbed in Krishna. Sometimes he doesn't even know he's doing these things. They just go automatically. So this is the power of devotional service. So this is what happens when the heart melts. If one's hairs do not stand on end, how can the heart melt? And if the heart does not melt, how can tears, love flow from the eyes? If one does not cry in spiritual happiness, how can one render devotional service to the Lord? And without such service, how can the consciousness be purified? So this is pure devotional service. If it's rendered in love of God, it's so powerful that it burns to ashes any obstacles that are in its path. Krishna explains devotional service as like a blazing fire that burns to ashes any impediments. And contrast that to any mystic yoga that makes little fires, but they're immediately extinguished by momentary desires that just come and go. But by hearing the Srimad Bhagavatam, either from the book Bhagavata or the person Bhagavata, like Prahlad Maharaj, Srila Prabhupada, and these transcendental literatures, then it ignites the blazing fire of love and service to Krishna, and it burns to ashes the network of this material illusion, of this mixture, this alloy, the soul alloy in the material contaminations. There's so many nice quotes. So the spiritual master asked, actually this shows the importance of the spiritual master. Lord Chaitanya asked Ramananda Roy, he said, what is considered to be the most painful existence? And he replied, that separation from a pure devotee constitutes the most painful existence. In other words, when there is no devotee of the Lord present, there is great suffering in society, and association with other people becomes painful. In Srimad Bhagavatam, it is stated that if one who is bereft of the association of a pure devotee tries to be happy through society, friendship, and love, devoid of Krishna consciousness, is considered to be in the most distressed condition. In the fifth canto, it's said that the association of a pure devotee is more desirable than life itself. And that is separation from him, one cannot even pass a second happily. So just see how valuable this human form of body is. It's like a boat that's guided through this miseries. And who's the captain of that boat? Is the spiritual master. You know, he's the guide. He's teaching us how to go. So there's madness here in the material world. But also real madness is, Prabhupada describes, is when all these dirty things are over with. We're over with all these dirty things. And Lord Chaitanya showed this when he was giving an example, and he quotes, Yugayitam nimeshene chakshusha parvishayitam sunyayitam jagat sarvam govinda virahena me. He's crying, oh Govinda, you know, one moment is equal to 12 years. So this is the kind of separation that when we feel this for Krishna, that means that all these dirty things are over with. But if we still have Krishna and then we want something else to enjoy, let me get some sense enjoyment, something for Krishna, something for sense enjoyment. That means that dirty things are still there. But the more we engage in this Nityam Bhagavata Sevaya, then these dirty things become cleansed. It's a gradual process. So this is how we should do. So this is the real value of life. And Ramananda was asked again, what is the real value of life? The most valuable thing in this world. And Ramananda Roy said, he who has love for Radha and Krishna possesses the most valuable jewel and the greatest riches. Compare that to people
addicted to material sense gratification, and they think they're really wealthy. They think they have something. But there's nothing more valuable. There's no riches that can compare to the love of Krishna. In fact, we found out what happens when one tries to get riches. All these 15 qualities affect one. And this is not, a pie in the sky. Today's special disappearance days. Maybe we could spend a few minutes here to listen to a few. I have a couple people mentioned, like Srinivasacharya. Today we can look at his biography. And we could a little bit about him and see. These are some devotees that have actually attained this state as examples in our sampradaya. So Srinivasacharya was one. After witnessing Lord Gauranga's sannyas ceremony at Katva, Chaitanya Das and his pregnant wife visited Lord Chaitanya in Jagannath Puri. Soon your wife will give birth to a son named Srinivas. And Lord Chaitanya and through Srinivas, all the bhakti shastras of Rupa and Sanatan will be distributed. So these are the sadhus that are given this knowledge. When his father left this world, Srinivas visited the remaining associates of Lord Gauranga in Katva, Navadvip, Jagannath Puri. They blessed Srinivas and gave him valuable instructions for spiritual advancement. Seeing his absorption in Gauranga Prema, they knew he was an embodiment of Gaura Shakti, the energy of Sri Gauranga Mahaprabhu. He came to Vrindavan, toured the 12 forests, and took Diksha from Gopal Bhatta Goswami. Sri Jiva Goswami taught him the complete philosophy of Gaudiya Vaishnavism. Acknowledging his vast learning, Sri Jiva gave Srinivas the title Acharya. So they were the ones that did the first transcendental book distribution. So you can see these are the Acharyas. They're given the example to give this transcendental knowledge. And this is what's wrong. People are in ignorance because they have no knowledge. They're engaged in sinful activities because they're in ignorance. And they're suffering because of these sinful activities. So therefore they need knowledge. They have to have this discriminatory knowledge to understand their real position. So here's something interesting also about how they get absorbed. Not only did Hamsa teach this Sankhya philosophy, but this Astanga Yoga, how to actually link with Krishna. And this is an example of Srinivasacharya, how he was completely absorbed in the spiritual world, how his mind was in a different place. And let's read a little bit here. We'll end with this. Besides his external activities of preaching and writing, Srinivasacharya practiced intensive Raganuga Bhajan. Raganuga Bhajan is a spontaneous internal worship of Radha and Krishna based on the mood and sentiments of the eternal residents of Sri Vrindavan Dham, such as the gopis. So he's doing Manasi Seva. So we have sadhana bhakti that we practice first, and then as that matures, following the principles, then we'll get to this Raganuga Bhakti. And this is an example here. Okay, so he was doing Manasa Seva, service to Radha and Krishna, within one's mind in a mentally achieved spiritual form. That's what that means. He would often bring tangible paraphernalia from these meditations back with him upon returning to external consciousness. Once Srinivas sat Lord Chaitanya on a jeweled throne within his mind. Then he worshipped the Lord with a golden-handled chamara whisk and a five-flower garland. Pleased with his service, Gaura Rai offered the garland back to Srinivas, who then immediately awoke and lost the meditation. A surprised Srinivas found the sweetest flower garland he ever smelled hanging around his neck when he returned to external consciousness. There's another one. Another time, Srinivas was in the Siddha Sarup of Mani Manjari watching Srimati Radharani, Sri Krishna, and the gopis in holy Leela. that's joyfully throwing color powders, you know, and dyes on each other. This is what devotees are starting to do now. The gopis told Manimanjari to supply colors to Radha and side with them on their war against Shyama. The earth shook from their furious battle. Srinivasa's meditation abruptly broke. His body was completely covered from head to toe with fragrant and exotic rainbow-colored powders imported from the spiritual world. Holy Lila Ki Jai. Srinivasacharya Ki Jai. So there's more, but there's like, what, four different personalities today? And it's also Gopastami. When Krishna became of age from, you know, not only, you know, from taking care of the calves to taking care of the cows. So he loved the cows and he worshipped the cows, Krishna. So anyway, this is, I'll end here, and if there's any other comments or questions. Yes? Yeah.
How is intelligence contaminated by deep sleep?
Yeah, just like we need, there's dreaming. If you don't dream, then you become psychotic in the material world. Deep sleep is like the mode of ignorance. All these merge into the deep sleep. Like at night when you sleep, dreamless sleep, it just merges, all the states of consciousness merge like that into deep sleep. Rest. Because you're covered over the mode of ignorance. You're not doing anything. You're just out. It's like you're knocked out, you know? So the intelligence should be constantly absorbed in Krishna consciousness, not in illusion. The illusory dream of the waking state is like a dream. Or the sleep dream is a dream. Sometimes we're dreaming and we dream that we're waking up, but you're still in the dream. So in the same way, we're awake, but this is like a dream if it's not engaged in devotional service. It's all dream. It's illusory. It doesn't have any value. Everything here we see is actually Krishna. But the illusion is that we think that these things are mine. I'm using them for me. But we see, oh, everything's Krishna. Krishna is everywhere, even in the States. But so we see that I should utilize everything for Krishna. Yeah, does it help? Okay. Any other questions, comments? Yes.
You explained, and you started listing some traits like anger, pride, excessive dangers of women. How does that, you read that a lot in Srila Prabhupada's books, like about women and, whatever. But why is that women are to blame, or something like, the dangers of women are to blame for men's own lust? And, how does that?
Yeah, woman means like, in a sense, enjoyment. Like a man to a woman is a woman. A woman wants to enjoy the man, and the man wants to enjoy the woman. So this is the mentality of enjoyment. So it's not that we have, downing or, looking down upon the class of women, because, it's a material designation. It's an illusion. We're not these bodies. We're not these designations. But it's the sense of enjoyment that is bad. And women can be the source of great inspiration, great spiritual advancement. They could give spiritual instruction, the same as a man. So sometimes it's just in general, like Prabhupada used that a lot, women, try to enjoy women. Like we try and enjoy something, a sense object, like that. These things are so dear and precious to us. We want to, enjoy them like a woman. Yeah, does that help? Because Archita, I'm sure, has something more to say.
Yeah, look at the context of the Vedic culture. It's not like today.
Yeah.
The Vedic culture was generally men that went out to self-realization. So these instructions, like the Nagisha Raiden or these great gatherings, it's usually just men, you don't see. So what is the difference in them? Now you turn out society, you're looking for spiritual life. The biggest danger for you is this sense of enjoyment. Project itself onto women. So that's why women miss it so much. to a group of women who told them the same thing. Don't stand around for men, this was going to be a tangle that was going to fall down.
So in Kali Yuga, is it that men have degraded to the state of women, or that women have risen, or is it just like we're all men?
Yeah, we're all.
So again, formally the instructions were directed to men. Now these are general instructions to men.
One thing that's solid is that the opposite sex are very attracted to each other. That's from that time to this time. So at this particular time, what you're saying is true. Mostly the Bhagavatam spoke of people that were sages, as he said, also ashram, and they were like brahmacharis.
Got that? Okay, sorry, it's too much for me to repeat on the mic. But I just want to end with one thing, that just as we're so attracted to getting something valuable, you know, understanding the form of the human, how valuable the form of human life is, actually the most valuable thing is just a mere seed. And this is the seed of devotion, the Bhakti Lata Bija. Because when you get this seed, and it's watered by our devotional service, then it actually develops a creeper, and then it penetrates all the material coverings, goes beyond the material coverings, beyond the Brahmajyoti, and it actually goes into the spiritual world. So as we're engaged in devotional service, we have to always have this discriminating power to protect this bead, this plant, as it's growing, a creeper, until it actually attains the shelter of Krishna's lotus feet. So that's the most valuable thing, is this bead that we can get in a human form. So thank you for your kind attention. All glories to Srimad Bhagavatam.